Well, greetings everyone, and welcome to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally and internationally 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 120 countries worldwide over the Internet. Now, for more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please visit our webpage at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. Now, the Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law, science, education, politics, religion, health, history, economics, news, and current events. So stay tuned for tonight's special report on stopping deflation right after this. You know, in 1787, the writers of our Constitution put in this clause at Article 1, Section 10. It says, no state shall make anything but gold or silver coin a tender in payment of debt. Now, that clause follows the biblical injunction on just weights and balances that we see in Leviticus 19, verses 35 and 36. Now, private business is carried on in gold and silver coin. It's public business that is conducted in commercial paper. Commercial paper, there's things like stocks, bonds, Federal Reserve notes, credit cards, debt, and usury. Now, back in 1965, Congress said that there was no difference in the value of gold and silver coin and clad coin or currency. And you know that's very true when we're dealing with banks, government, and commercial industries. But out here in the real marketplace, there's a 7-to-1 difference in the purchasing power of that gold over paper, and there's a 7-to-1 difference in the taxes that are due on that paper over the gold. Now, God and our founding fathers didn't give us gold and silver coin for no good purpose. They knew that as a matter of law, gold and silver coin was absolutely necessary for us to deal in order for us to establish our property rights. Well, you know, our Congress and politicians didn't take our gold and silver coin away from us for no good reason either. They knew, and they knew full well when they did it back in 1933, that in order to subjugate a free people, they must first take away the people's right to own property. And they did that by destroying the people's property rights by taking away their gold and silver coin. Now, if you and I intend to regain our rights, duties, and capacities, then we must first regain our property and our property rights. And that's because property is the legal foundation for all of our liberties. So let me show you how to do just that. That's in our business school, which is now on compact disc for adult homeschool. Now, if you'd like more information, why don't you call and order our free 4-hour general law CD package. Remember, that's a 4-hour commentary now on the law in general. And it's informative, it's entertaining, it's educational, and it's free of charge. You can call and order one right now. The number is 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, our business school is also available on compact disc for adult home study. If you're online, go to our website. That's georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. Click on the email, send us an email request for that free general law CD package. Once more, that's georgegordon.org, or call us direct at 417-273-4967. Do it right now while you're thinking about it before you forget. All right, we've been talking about the privateer. I said we'll start off here with the privateer. It's a bi-monthly, twice a month, economics newsletter. I recommend this guy's name is Bill Buckler, and he's got a real genius, a real knack for reducing the complexities of this worldwide economic meltdown and to put it in simple language that ordinary folks, you know, like us bottom feeders out here, the truck drivers and housewives and waitresses, you know, and the bus drivers and electricians and carpenters can understand. And the reason that it's important for us to understand is because we're getting screwed, blued, and tattooed here by these fat cats on Wall Street and government, you know, the politicians in Congress, they're sticking it to us. And they're making a lot of money doing it. And then I don't blame them. You know, I mean, if I was making a lot of money and I could steal it from you, I guess I'd probably get out there and do that. But there's another side to this coin over here. And I've said before, you know, if it's good for government, you know, to have an underground shelter, public officials and politicians, to protect them from nuclear bomb war, I think it's just as good for a housewife and a truck driver to have a fallout shelter to protect them from that same nuclear bomb. And now we've got a financial bomb that's gone off. And the fat cats are out here scurrying like rats leaving a sinking ship. And I think that it would be good for the rest of us on board the ship. Don't go back to your stateroom. Don't waste another minute going down to the ADEC lounge so that you can have another drink on the White Star Line. Start thinking about how to get the hell off this tub. Because she's going down. Now, most of the people that are on this economic cruise are going down with the ship. There's just no two ways about it. And I'm not here to get on the air to tell you people, follow me and I'm going to lead you guys into safety and security and save you from your trouble. I'm just going to tell you ahead of time, you're probably going to drown along with everybody else when the ship sinks. A few of you people might actually get off this thing, you know, if you get with the program. It's already way too late to save your 401k. I mean, you can forget that. It's gone. That's history. That's toast. Hell, you've already lost half of it, partner, and you're going to lose the other half. And that's because you can't sell it now. Psychologically, you've got this hang-up. You've got to stick with the program and see if you can make back your losses over the long haul. See, you've already bought in to that ruse. And so you're going to stick with it. All right, now when you do, then you're going to lose the other half. I mean, if you had your head on straight, you'd sell what you can, you'd save what you could, and that'd be the end of that. Reminds me of a guy that was on a ship, and it was sinking, and so he took all of his gold, put it in a bag, and then he tied it around his waist and jumped in the water. And he sank. Well, okay. Gold's heavy, and if you tie a lot of gold around your waist and jump in the water, you'll probably sink. That's what happened to this guy. The good news is that it didn't sink with the ship. It sank with the body. And so it's still lying on the bottom of the ocean, but you know, the guy's just as dead. Now, I don't know if he would have survived if he'd have jumped in the water without the gold. He probably would have died anyway. But, you know, he wouldn't have certainly died. He might have died. The same thing is true here. Now, Buckler is pointing out, and the last time we were talking about this, we were talking about playing the valuation game. So what people have done, they've used their houses for ATM machines. I didn't do that, not because I'm so smart. It's because my house is not for economic speculation. My house is to live in. I need this house for shelter. That's the purpose for house. It's like your clothes. You know, you need your clothes to keep warm. You need food to sustain your life. You need food, clothing, and shelter. I didn't speculate with my house because I needed my house for shelter. So the value of my house, at the same time your house was going up in value, so was mine. But I didn't go out and borrow any money against it. My house is free and clear in 2006, and it's free and clear today. But in 2006, you ran out and you borrowed a bunch of money, and you went out and bought a new car, and you bought some stocks and bonds and had a good time. Took a holiday, went on Carnival Cruise or something like that. Now, as time went along, the valuation of your house decreased. See, I got a daughter like that, you know, lovely young lady. Got to love her like all daddies love their daughters. But this girl went to college. I didn't send her there, but she figured out for herself she needed to go to college. And so she went to college, and she's real smart, and she's got a degree, and now she's an, I don't know if she's an economist, but she's a CPA. Now, she and her husband had a house, and the last time I heard there was a number on it was $232,000, way back here, you know, 10, 15 years ago. They had this mortgage on there for $232,000. I think it was about $2,000, about 10 years ago. And the house at that time was underwater. They owed more against it than they could sell it for. So they hung on to it, and they kept making the payments on it. And so as time went along, this house went up in value to, I think it was $600,000. So it went from $200,000 to $600,000. And my wife was talking to her one day and said, why don't you sell your house for $600,000, then move to Jacksonville, Florida, buy the same house for $150,000, and you'll probably have $150,000 left over. Put that into gold coin, bury it in a hole in the ground in the backyard, and live happily ever after. And my daughter said, I've always wanted to live in a $500,000 house, and now I do. Last time I heard, the house was worth about $350,000. Okay? Now, as time progresses along, that house is going to be worth something less than $232,000. Again. And then the house will be upside down, and then they can keep making the payments on this house that isn't worth what they're paying. In other words, there was a valuation game to be played here. When the valuation went up, it reached its peak in 2006. I think it was June of 06, or June of 05 now. Maybe it was 05. And at that point in time, they should have sold it. You know, when it reaches its peak and it starts falling off, then get rid of it and get into something else. They didn't do that. And so they rode the valuation game up to the top, and now they're going to ride it back down to the bottom. Now, many people made a mistake. My daughter didn't make this mistake. She didn't go out and borrow $600,000 against the house. They just lived in it. They just failed to take advantage of the valuation when it hit six. And so they stayed in it. Now they're going to ride the roller coaster down to the bottom again. So they're not going to get hurt. They're just not going to make anything. Now, most people, though, when it went from 200 to 600, they went out and refinanced, and they took all their money out, and they made a lot of money, and then they went and spent the money. Now they owe $600,000 on a house that's now worth $350,000. See where their problem is? If you're in that boat, you know, the best thing can happen to you is just get the hell out. Now, I teach a business school, and we'll show you how to do that if you want to learn. But then after you get out, you still have to live someplace. You still have to go out and make a living. And now we're losing our jobs. See? Well, that means you got to be able to go out there and make a living without a job. I do that every day. I don't have a job. My first wife said, why don't you go out and get a real job? God love her. She wanted me to pack my lunch bucket and go to work in the mine and bring home a paycheck every week. And I'm just not designed very well that way. And so I'm out here in the business world, and I buy and I sell and I trade, and sometimes I make it and sometimes I lose it. And when it's all said and done, at the end of the day, I tend to make a little bit more than I lose, and so I have a little profit left over. And so I just wanted to point out that you might be in that same boat, losing your job in the mine. You might have to actually go out here and make a living on your own. It's a wild new idea, but just thought I'd throw that one out there for you. Now, these prices are falling, and they're in free fall. Prices right now, we haven't got any idea where the bottoms are worldwide. I mean, you take a look around at housing prices in England. Where's the bottom? Hell, we don't know. They're still going down. Every month they go down. They have now for 16 months. Are they going to go down for 16 more? We don't know. Now, of course, the mainstream media, they're telling you it's just around the corner. Stick to it for the long haul. You know, stay with your 401k. Don't give up. We've got to have hope for the future. Well, okay. That's like riding on the Titanic. You got to hope that it isn't going to sink. Yeah, but it is going to sink. I already read the book. I saw the movie. It's going to sink. And a lot of people are going to die in the process. A lot of those people listened to the captain and crew. They went back to their staterooms. A lot of them went down to the A-deck lounge and had a couple of drinks on the White Star Line. Come on. It's time to wake up. Ship's going to sink. You ain't saving Goldman Sachs. You're not going to save J.P. Morgan or Citigroup. And the people that are running those bankrupt zombies know that. They're just milking them for all they're worth. That's why they're taking all these bonuses and all. They're just milking them at your expense. If prices keep falling, the economic goods put up as collateral for a loan are taken over by the lender, and the borrower's credit rating is then torn to shreds. Credit card companies cut their credit limits back drastically. That's what they're doing now, and often below the amount already borrowed on the card, rendering the cards useless. Suddenly, many people are all thrown back upon their weekly or monthly earnings, which they can't live on, as that's why they were spending on their credit cards and using their houses for ATM machines. Monetary savings were minimal, amounting in some cases just loose change on the counter. Then the borrower loses his job, and then the mortgage is foreclosed. Your cars have already been repossessed. Finally, a stunned family is living in a tent and surviving on food stamps. That's because they played the valuation game and lost. Now, many of you have played the valuation game and you lost. Okay, so that's past tense. That's history. Now, tomorrow is the next day or the first day of the rest of your life. And now we have to go out and we have to make a living, don't we? What could have been isn't and is never going to be. So let's wake up and smell the coffee. And probably one of the best guys to help you wake up and smell the coffee here is this guy, Bill Buckler. Like I said, he's got a real knack at simplifying the problem. Now, if you want to believe that everything's going to get roasty toasty and rosy and it's going to get better, well, go ahead. That's fine. Hell, I'm not here to spoil your day. Turn the dial and go get some rock music and tap your feet and have a good day. Now, let's take a look at the valuation game from the lender's point of view. One of the intellectually astounding aspects of the U.S. mortgage debacle was the fact that while the United States real estate bubble was being blown up, there were next to no comments which pointed out that the more the U.S. lenders lent for real estate purchases, the better their collateral underpinnings became under all of the loans previously made. The trouble was clearly on the horizon when millions of Americans discovered that they could use the climbing values of their houses for other loans from other lenders. So they started to use their houses as if they were ATM machines. The collateral was eaten up from behind by all of these loans. And when the bubble burst, the falling prices in the U.S. real estate market and the falling valuations of the houses not offered for sale fell right through the collateral, leaving the United States billions of loans with no support. All right, now you already know that. You already saw that happen. As the bubble was being blown up, if you'll remember, Alan Greenspan lowered interest rates down to 1%. Hell, you could go to the bank and borrow money. And the loan officers at the banks were making money hand over fist, making all these loans to people that they knew or should have known at some point in time were going to default on these notes. Everybody in the know knew this was coming. Anybody that, you know, his IQ is above 80 or 90, you know, could have put two and two together. So I didn't use my house as an ATM machine. I didn't retire. I doubled the stroke. I paid off all my debts. I said, hell, this thing's going to turn turtle. And it did. It did. Now, I'm not sitting here roasty-toasty and, you know, smiling, laughing up my sleeve, you know, making fun of everybody. You know, I got to get out and hustle like everybody else. But the difference is my mind is clear. I'm not sitting here befuddled wondering, oh, my God, will the president be able to bail this out? The answer is no, the president will not be able to bail this out. Gee, I wonder if they'll be able to save the ship. The answer is no, they will not be able to save the ship. It's going to sink. Do you wonder if I can get off the ship if it sinks? The answer is, boy, you better be scrambling. Don't waste a minute. Get with the program. Save everything you can while you can. Now, in most cases, your house is gone, your cars are gone, those are toast. Your 401k, there might be a little something to save there. In some cases, I talked to a guy up in Canada the other day, and he had quite a little story to tell. I got to share it with you. He lives on a lake up on Vancouver Island. He called me on telephone. He said, hey, I live on this lake. I've been listening to your program, and I think you're probably about half right. And he said, I'd like to sell my house, but houses aren't selling up here. And I said, that's right. They haven't been selling anywhere. Who in hell is going to buy your house? I mean, it's your house is worth, and this guy's house is worth, I don't know, $300,000-$500,000. It's a big ticket house sitting on a lake up here somewhere, you know, on Bellwood Estates. And so he said, houses up here been on the market for months and months. People aren't even looking. But he said, you know, I'm going to put it on the market. Now, he said, I'm going to start practicing the biblical laws. And I said, well, that'll be a step in the right direction. So he did. He started practicing some of these laws, these economic laws. And he wants to practice the Sabbaths and holy days. He started practicing the weekly Sabbath, which is pretty important. Put his house on the market, and 2 days after he put it on the market, he got an offer, and a week later the house closed. And he sold it for what he put it on the market for. Probably less than it would have sold for a couple of years ago, but he put it on the market for what they're selling for now, or what they think it's selling for. So I wanted to point out to you now, if you'll start practicing the Sabbaths and holy days, you know, if you'll give God a little down payment over here, then go to Malachi 3, verse 8, and he says very plainly, he says, you know, if you'll quit lying to me, stealing from me, and screwing me over, I'll pour you out a blessing and won't be room enough to receive it. But if you keep giving me the finger, I'm going to eat your lunch. That's all that's happening here. The world's getting their lunch eaten by the Creator himself. So I said I'd point that out. Now, the valuation game over here now is a dead letter issue. You can forget that. It ain't going to happen in the future. Now, there's a great write-down going on. In the United States, $11.2 trillion was wiped off the net worth of Americans last year. Even worse, in the fourth quarter of last year, U.S. household assets dropped a record $5.5 trillion. That was just in the last quarter. That's a 31% annualized rate. This data comes from the U.S. Flow of Funds report. This massive historic fall is the net worth of Americans, or in the net worth of Americans, is panicking the powers that be in Washington and New York. Since that same net worth is the real underpinnings of the loans which have been made by the U.S. banking and financial system. All right, now let's pause right here and think about this. Last year, Americans lost $11 trillion. That $11 trillion they lost was the collateral. It was the valuation on their houses, on their stocks, their bonds. So when you lost that amount of money, the price or the value of your house went down, then the collateral of the bank went down. Can you see that? All of these banks are insolvent. They're upside down. They're underwater. They're bankrupt. They're just walking zombies, taking fictitious money coming out of the Federal Reserve that they're just creating right out of thin air. There's no corresponding goods and services out there for the dollars that are being created. You know, if the government's going to create a dollar, then there has to be a loaf of bread on the shelf. They're creating the dollars, but there's no new loaves of bread on the shelf. So you got more demand sucking those goods off the shelf. Pretty soon, the goods are going to be gone. Now, you're going to start seeing shortages here in a couple, 3 months. Tuck it away in your heart. Shortages. Shortages, I say. That means that you need a 4-year food supply. Now. You needed it last month, last year, but you surely need it now because it's just going to disappear. Better than that, you need to be able to produce your own food. You need to get to a place in life where you can produce your own and all of it, because that's probably what you're going to need to do. Now, there is insufficient collateral inside the United States to support all of these loans. As a consequence, almost the entire U.S. banking and financial system is insolvent. I'm going to underline that. As a consequence, the entire U.S. banking and financial system is insolvent. Well, hell, that's nothing new. Down in Brazil, you're insolvent also. Hey, you people down in Australia, you're insolvent down there. Canada, you're insolvent. The whole world is now insolvent. We owe more, and the valuations are declining than it's all worth. That's the bottom line. There isn't any saving. There isn't any bailout. It's already a done deal. We're all dead. Or as the Mugambo would say, how does he word that now? He says, we're all doomed. Only he says, we're all freaking doomed. That's the way he does it. All right, now that being the case, then we need to be thinking for ourselves and we need to be acting for ourselves. Now, there's going to be a lot of disruptions. There's going to be martial law. There's going to be civil unrest. There's ultimately going to be World War III. Bet on it. It's the way it's always been in the past. And the next round of war is going to be nuclear. That's why the President and the Congress and the Supreme Court have these underground bunkers scattered around America, along with all the military people. They plan on surviving. It's just you and me, Joe, that are the cannon fodder. They're going to leave us up here. I mean, after all, we're in debt and can't pay the debts anyway. They just let us die. But tuck this away in your heart. Before you get to that point, we're all bankrupt. Now, we need to change that. So if you're bankrupt and you're insolvent over here, you need to get to zero COD. Even in depressions, people make money. Fortunes are made in depressions. You can make a fortune. You can make money. You can make a living. You can survive. Right now in the depression, I don't care how bad off things are. You're living in a tent along the railroad tracks. Okay, big deal. You're not the first guy that's been in that boat, and you won't be the last. And then you can get out. Now, it takes a little knowledge. That's why I said you got to have a legal education. The last series of programs, I said, you know, God told you plainly. He said, number one, you need a legal education. If you had a legal education, you wouldn't be in this jam to start with. Now, if we can give you a legal education, we can get you out of this jam. Barack Obama has a legal education, but his legal education came out of Harvard. It didn't come out of the scripture. If he'd have got a legal education from Moses, we might have a president that could lead us out of this. But this guy ain't going to lead us out of it. He's leading us right into the pit. This present administration's leading us down into the pit. That's why the Obama administration and the Fed are shoveling trillions of new U.S. dollars at the monetary end of the seesaw. They hope that if they place enough trillions of dollars there, that they will lift all of the prices as well as the valuations. And in the process of rebuilding the collateral foundation under this entire financial system. But the seesaw is going to break. And the growing danger here is that instead of levering the U.S. valuations and prices upwards again, the U.S. Treasury will break its own international credit standing, and the U.S. Fed will break the U.S. dollar. If that happens, and the danger is very real, the seesaw breaks at the fulcrum, the monetary end crashes and ends up in the same predicament as the collateral foundation of the real U.S. economy, with both of the ends of the U.S. economic seesaw on the ground, and the financial and monetary system crashes. Now, that's what happened in 1783. It didn't happen in 1929. See, we had a financial break, but the monetary system didn't break. the money was still good. Now you're going to have a double whammy. Not only is your economy going to break, but your money is going to break. So you're going to have no economy and no money. Last time around, we had no economy, but we had money. And so the money would tide you over if you had it. If you didn't have it, the money had value. Now you're going to enter into a hyperinflation with no monetary value. That'll drive all the goods off the shelf. Then you'll have no economy and no money. That's the worst of both worlds. That's what happened to us in 1783. Now the difference is in 1783, somebody woke up. His name was Roger Sherman. He said, hey, let's get off this paper crap and let's get onto gold and silver coin. And it takes 36 months. That's the experience that we had the last time we did this. And it worked. 36 months to get that economy reignited. So right now, you're 36 months away, and Barack Obama is telling you, well, by the end of my administration, I think we can turn this around. Okay, that's right. It's going to take about 3 years to turn it around. If you did the right things, if you do all the wrong things, you not only won't turn it around in 3 years, you won't turn it around in 6, 9, or 12 years. So this is going to be of long duration. This is going to be one sick puppy. All right, we'll take a look at intensifying this danger signal in the U.S. credit default swap. Say, listen, we've got these derivatives out here. Remember these nails we're driving in the coffin? We haven't even gotten to the real bad house loans yet. They're still coming up. And we haven't even gotten to the derivatives yet. That's a $100 trillion time bomb that's ready to blow up. We got more nails that we're going to drive in the coffin. First of all, this thing ain't salvageable from today forward. And we haven't even gotten to the bad part yet. There are two worse problems coming. The collapse of derivatives and the collapse of the dollar. That's going to be even worse. And it's going to be triggered by the next round of housing defaults, which is coming up in a city near you shortly. And let me give you a reminder here that you're listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, and we're heard around the world in more than 120 countries daily over the Internet and radio. If you'd like more information about the Law School and The Law Hour, please go to our website at georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. The law school teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective, 8 schools in all. The law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school that is open to individuals but by prearrangement. The law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc, and the Law Hour website is updated weekly. It has our radio log schedule and archives, all of which can be accessed through our website at georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience. The Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest, and the law school offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. Be sure to order yours by calling the law school and asking for it. The number to call is 417-273-4900. 67. Once more, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, the sources of information that we use on this program are true, accurate, and correct to the best of our knowledge and belief, and the Law Hour and editorial review gives credit to those authors and publications that we use on this program, and we often endorse or recommend books, papers, periodicals, and newsletters to our listeners. Now, these endorsements or recommendations that we give don't mean that the authors and publications that we're endorsing or recommending will necessarily reciprocate. Keep in mind that most of these authors and publications cited here on the Law Hour and editorial review may be hostile, political, religious, economic, sectarian, racial, or ethnic partisans, and their viewpoint may not be totally endorsed by the Law Hour and editorial review either. Now, these opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program are mine and mine alone. They don't necessarily represent the views, beliefs, or the opinions of the advertisers, sponsors, management, or staff of this radio network or of this local radio station. Now, if you'd like more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, then please go to our website at georgegordon.org, or you can call us direct at 417-273-4967. All right, we are reviewing the newsletter, The Privateer, Stopping Deflation. Now, the intensifying danger signal, the U.S. credit default swaps, the spreads on credit default swaps for U.S. Treasury debt hit 97 basis points last week. That means that it takes $97,000 to buy insurance to insure $10 million of Treasury bonds. Now, that is seven times higher than the level of 1 year ago, and 60% higher than at the end of 2008. Now, that is a huge danger signal, right? I'm going to underline that. Let's suppose that you went out and you bought $10 million worth of treasuries. You could walk into the marketplace and buy insurance, a credit default swap. That's insurance on defaulted credit. Well, the banks all did that. See, they went out and made these bad loans. Then they went over to AIG, the insurance company. Remember this big insurance company that you taxpayers now own 80% of? That's special. And they said, hey, sell us some insurance. We made some adjustable rate mortgage loans over here, so sell us some insurance. And so the insurance company said, well, sure, we'll sell you insurance. Just pay us our money. Give us our bonuses. And so they wrote the insurance on these adjustable rate mortgages. Crazy mortgages that everybody knew would someday go into default, the insurance company insured. Now, sure enough, the thing goes into default. So now the insurance company has to pay off. And the insurance company hasn't got enough money to pay off. So to keep the economy from crashing worldwide, the government goes in and takes over AIG and then guarantees all of this credit. Uh-oh. Where does the government get all this money? They just create it right out of thin air. And they get the authority to do that from the taxpayers, who gave the government their power of attorney. So you people aren't voting for these projects. They're just being created and produced by your legislators. You gave them your power of attorney at the last election, remember? And they're using your power of attorney to borrow all this money. Money that they don't have and will never be able to be paid off. And now you have to come up with $5.5 billion a day to fund this massive $12 trillion debt. That's up from $2 billion last year. It was $2 billion a day, now it's $5.5 billion. How you like that? And that isn't going to stimulate your economy. It isn't going to do jack diddly squat. So wake up and smell the coffee. Now, there's one other factor. For every job that's being created, remember President Obama said he's going to create 3 million jobs? Okay. They're going to do that, and it'll cost $250,000 per job. Huh? Are you paying attention out there? Listen to that. The president got a plan. He says, listen, follow me, and we're going to go out here, we're going to create 3 million jobs. Now, we lost 6 million jobs over the last 8 years. They've been offshored and outsourced. We lost 6 million jobs. President says we're going to create 3 or 4 million more. How are we going to do that? We're going to borrow the money. We're going to pay $250,000 for each job that we create. And we're going to put these people to work at $40,000, $50,000 a year building infrastructure. Excuse me, I'm not too smart here, but excuse me, if we were going to borrow all this money, why don't we just take the $250,000 and just give it to 4 million unemployed people? Don't hire them to do anything. Just give them the money, which would be about five times more money than they're going to make on this job anyway. And then they could go out and spend the money and stimulate the economy, which is the purpose for this entire exercise to start with, isn't it? I mean, which would you rather have, a job that pays you $50,000 a year or the $250,000? Now, look at the craziness behind this. All of us have to go out here and work and pay our taxes so that we can give $250,000 to hire a guy for $50,000. Well, what happens to the other 200,000? Well, that'll go to your politicians and big business and Halliburton and no-bid contracts and so on. Now, is that really what you people want to buy? Oh, okay, well, that's what you're buying, whether you knew that or not. Now, a key measure of the net foreign capital outflows that are arriving in the U.S. is called the monthly TIC flow. TIC stands for Treasury International Capital. As already mentioned, this Treasury data showed an outflow of $150 billion in January after an inflow of $86 billion in December. For all of 2008, the rest of the world's holdings of U.S. financial assets increased by $857 billion. So we passed out $857 billion worth of paper, and they sent us big screen TVs and tennis shoes and other stuff. Bought our treasury securities and took our paper. Now, there will come a point in time when these people will wake up and they'll start smelling the coffee and they'll say, you know, I'm not sure we're going to get paid back. Now, the Chinese premier just said that the other day. He said, hey, you Americans, honor your commitments. Well, then Tim Gaither came out and said, here's our plan. We have already, for you Chinese people over there, now pay attention. We have already increased our money supply by $12 trillion, which is more than double. We had $9.5 trillion in circulation. That was as of September of last year. Now we got $12 trillion in addition to that, which is just monetized debt. And so 12 and 9 is 21. So we're going over $20 trillion. Now that's what we think of honoring that debt that we owe to you Chinese. We're just going to cut it in half. We're going to pay you. 50 cents on the dollar is what you're going to get in real goods. That's assuming that you can spend it all in the morning. Because every day that you're hanging on to it, you're losing somewhere in the neighborhood of 12% plus. Now, that sounds like a lot, but in 2007, the inflow into the United States was $2 trillion. In 2008, that flow decreased by 59%. The U.S. needs an ongoing inflow of foreign money to fund its combined trade and current account deficits. And the U.S. Treasury needs it so that it can fund its budget deficits. See these budget deficits? $2 trillion, that's what's coming up. That's why I said, you know, you're going to have $5.5 billion a day to fund that. Where's that coming from? We're just going to print it and monetize it and stick it out there into circulation, which will dilute the value of all the dollars that are out there by... what's the number here? 59%. That's not good. That's another nail in the coffin. Now, I've already pointed out to you that you got several of these nails in your coffin already. That's not all of the nails, but that's some of them. Now, there's demonstrable absurdity in action. This is one that even is so far-fetched that it probably couldn't even qualify for Ripley's Believe It or Not. But listen to this. Last month, Bloomberg put the total cost of the many U.S. bailouts so far at US$9.7 trillion. That's enough to hand every American household a check for $92,000 or to pay off 90% of home mortgages in the country. Since then, the tally of U.S. bailouts has climbed to US$11.9 trillion. This is complete fiscal and monetary madness. That's what this economy says. He said, this is complete fiscal and monetary madness. All right, well, those of us that have been sitting here watching this over the last 30 years are concluding the same thing. You know, we think this is insane. Does that mean I'm going to change anything? Not at all. Not at all. Am I trying to get you Jews to convert to Christianity? No. No, not at all. Catholics trying to get you to convert to Protestantism? Oh, no. No, not at all. But there's a God out there, and he said, told us, and gave us the instructions. He said, hey, don't use unjust weights and balances. And, of course, we're smarter than God, and so we did. And so now here's the results of it. And so the cure to this malady isn't to go back to gold and silver. It's to print more money. If $9 trillion got us into this mess, surely $12 trillion will get us out of it. And so this guy says, well, this is just insane. Let me give this guy's name and number again. This is called the Privateer. And you'll find this guy, his phone number is 617. Got that down? 617-5471. 5471. And then the number is 1960. This guy's in Queensland, Australia. The telephone number again is 617-5471-1960. I bet you he'd be real surprised if you called him today. I bet you'll get him at 3 o'clock in the morning. And their webpage is at www.the-privateer.com. Or you can email him at capt@the-privateer.com. All right. We're reviewing the Privateer. Now, the Privateer is an economics newsletter. The thing that's so good about this guy is that he puts it in plain language. He's laying it right out here so a truck driver can grasp this. Maybe it's a little difficult when you hear me read it to you, but, hey, listen, when you pick this up and you read it, as dumb as I am, I can pick it up and read it. I can grasp it. I can understand it. There's not just one problem out there. There's about 20. And all 20 of them are a knife in our heart. All 20 of them. Any one of them would destroy us. And we got 20 of them. And Barack Obama ain't going to save us. And neither is Tim Gaither or helicopter Ben Bernanke. It ain't going to happen. Now, what will happen, though, there will be some survivors. And some people will buckle down. They'll say, uh-oh. And if that's the case, then I got to take instant, immediate action. Now, after we get through with this complete fiscal and monetary madness, the global three Ds. The first one is deflation. This one is enormous. It has no precedent in history in either scale or dimension. The deflation that is going on today, boys and girls, has no precedent in history. In either scale or dimension. We have never seen anything like this. And here's the best part. It's still in free fall, and we haven't got a clue as to when this thing's going to bomb. All right? Now, it's still going on worldwide. The combined losses on shares and real estate now come to more than $100 trillion. Prices and valuations have to follow downwards to restart industries and their production and trade. the ongoing attempts to hold prices up or to stimulate the world's economies with bailouts, exploding budget deficits, rampant credit creation, or waves of paper money printing will simply prolong the agony and ensure a prolonged global depression. That's what they did the last time. That's what they're in the process of doing now. Bank on it. You got a long depression in the works. The second of the global D's is deleveraging. This one still is going on at very high speed, and it has, however, now gained a steady rhythm as businesses, families, and individuals across the world begin to repay the debts that they owe. That gives the deflation another push, because a commercial bank loan repaid contracts the total volume of bank loans outstanding. Deleveraging is, in this sense, feeding the deflation. So our first problem is that we have complete fiscal and monetary madness. Then we've got the first is deflation. That's $100 trillion lost. The second is called deleveraging. We're in the process of deleveraging or paying off those debts, which takes the money out of circulation, which exacerbates the deflation. How do you like that? So every time you pay off $100 on your credit card, you're taking $100 out of circulation. The third of the global D's is deglobalization. And this can clearly be observed by noting the fantastic fall in ocean traffic, which has been reported in several recent privateer newsletters. The global result of that is that fewer foreign economic goods are arriving on foreign shores, and the flow will contract further in the months and years ahead. This will cause more national, regional, and even localized economies to spring up as people try to supply themselves and to produce and sell closer to where they presently live. These more local zones will be the new hubs of production, enterprise, business, and trade, as were the Renaissance cities. Back then in northern Italy, these cities appeared to the Italians to have sprung right out of the ground. Make a very special note of this historical economic fact. When the merchants of Genoa began to issue a coin with a fixed content of gold, it became the economic powerhouse of the early Renaissance and kept the advantage until all of the other Italian city-states issued their own gold coin. So we've been through this before. When these economic collapses occur, you go back to gold and silver, and a renaissance occurs, kind of miraculously and spontaneously. That isn't going to happen this time. The powers that be are going to give us more fiat paper currency. They are not going to give us gold and silver. Rest assured. Now, a new world is dawning. It's called a global relocalization. From here on, as the old system of credit and fiat money tears itself apart, think forward to the new renaissance, which can happen almost anywhere. And keep it clearly in mind that the only renaissance was one of the most creative periods in history in the sciences, in the arts, in painting, in sculpture, and in architecture. And to this day, people in their many millions fly to northern Italy simply to see the wonders of that time and to sometimes wonder why we don't have the like in our time today. The answer to that question is twofold. Modern nations have become too big, and they have come under the control of huge centralized bureaucracies. They did not have that problem in northern Italy during the early Renaissance because the reach of any small city government barely extended for 50 miles. That meant that if one small local government went off the rails, people in their hundreds simply left for a local government close by where political or economic circumstances were better. Seven small republics on the mudflats around the estuary of the Rhine River formed themselves into a form of confederacy, which later became known as Holland. Inside less than 100 years, they made themselves into one of history's greatest mercantile powers. And they, too, had a flowering of sciences and the arts, which millions of people came from all over the world to see. And they, too, went for a hard gold coinage. So in every one of these success stories, there's hard gold coinage. No exceptions. And we got that directly from the Creator himself, who said, don't use unjust weights and balances. Use sound money. Now, for you and me, any time that you and I and our families and our personal finances go back to hard money, we'll get the same turnaround at the local level that these city-states got in northern Italy. And if we don't, then we'll go down the tubes just like everybody else. Choice is yours. You got a choice to make. Go make it. Then the Renaissance and its ideas traveled to England, which had its Elizabethan Renaissance, and to this day the works of Shakespeare formed the English-speaking mind. John Locke followed with his second treatise, as did Blackstone with his commentaries, and Adam Smith with his Wealth of Nations. So, there are a number of writers of the Middle Ages said, hey, listen, let me tell you how this thing works. Blackstone's commentaries told us. The scripture told us. The city-states and the Renaissance told us. And our own experience in 1787 through 1792 told us. We know the answer. It's worked in the past. It's gold and silver coin. It's not more paper. But then that's not what the powers that be are going to give us. But it's what you need in order to pull yourself out, pull yourself up by your own bootstraps. All right. So we've got a new global relocalization coming. It'll split up. It'll just normally and naturally happen. People have to live. And people will go out and they'll work and they'll buy and sell and trade. There'll be a lot of dislocation. There'll be a lot of hurt feelings. And there'll be a lot of weeping and wailing and gnashing of teeth. But in the end, when it's all said and done, those of us that have the money will take advantage of those that don't. That's all. There will be a massive reallocation of property. Property that you've had for a long time and you think is yours is going to go to somebody else. Houses, cars, estates, summer homes, all this is going to be swept away. And somebody else will end up owning it. So you might as well be the guy that ends up owning somebody else's lost property. You know? It's either you're going to do it or somebody's going to do it to you, one or the other. All right, so that's the privateer. Remember, the privateer is the-privateer.com. The-privateer.com. There's their online address. Let me give you a final reminder here that you have been listening to the Law Hour and Editorial Review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, the Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, and we're heard around the world in more than 120 countries daily over the Internet and radio. If you'd like more information about the Law School and the Law Hour, please go to our website. That's georgegordon.org. georgegordon.org. The law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school that is open to individuals but by prearrangement. The law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults and compact disc, and the Law Hour website is updated weekly, and it has a radio log schedule and archives, all of which can be accessed through our website at georgegordon.org. georgegordon.org. Now, the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. All right, our time's up. We've got to leave it right there, so we'll see you back here tomorrow night, same time, same station, God willing, of course. So until then, thanks for listening, everybody, and good night, friends.